Welcome to Mac Voices number 507. This is the show that is the talk of the Macintosh community, and I'm your host, Chuck Joyner. Unless you've been living under a rock, you know that Apple's iPod is the number one portable music player by any measurement you care to consider. The recent introductions of the iPod Nano and the iPod with video are just the latest improvements in the juggernaut that is the iPod. But the iPod is much more than just a way to take your favorite tunes with you or a new way to watch video. For the second time, Apple introduced a product that fundamentally changed segments of our culture and created new ones. Leander Caney, who documented the intensity of Macintosh enthusiasts in The Cult of Mac, joins us to talk about the iPod phenomena and his new book, The Cult of iPod. Leander, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Chuck. Thank you for having me.
Leander, your last book, The Cult of Macintosh, was a great look at the hardcore Macintosh community, something many have indeed compared to a cult. But the times have changed. Is there a cult of iPod?
There is, I think. There's definitely a culture of iPod. It's changed the way people get and listen to their music. And I think it sparked a really fanatical following, the same way that the Macintosh has inspired one.
Is it a culture-changing force, Leander? Is that what you're implying in the book?
I think it is, yeah. Although when I wrote the book, most of it was written last year, and a lot of it has really happened this year. Although it is pretty, you know, it's pretty up-to-date. I've tried to keep it as up-to-date as possible because of the long lead times. You know, it's not possible to be bang up today. But I think it's really become, it's accelerating at such a pace that, you know, a lot of the action happened over the summer and in the fall. And it's just a juggernaut. I mean, it's absolutely changing the entire music industry. And it's having a knock-on effect, too, with, you know, the way we listen to, with the radio business, with the way that music is produced and sold, the way that it's enjoyed. I mean, cars, a full third of cars, you know, this year or early next year are going to be iPod compatible off of the park, you know, off the lot. It's had this an amazing, it's swept, you know, right through the culture, and it has changed the way that people listen to music.
The idea of an iPod compatible car sometimes seems like putting the cart before the horse. What other examples are there out there that you've found that are similar to that really demonstrate the power of the iPod?
Look at all of the different stereo systems you can get now, or the different systems you can hook the iPod to the stereo. It goes from, you know, a simple cord to these elaborate in-wall wireless, you know, around the house systems that cost thousands of dollars. I think, you know, the stereo industry is recognizing that people, you know, they need some way for people to get their music off of their iPod and into the stereo speakers. You know, the iPod is like when I was, you know, a teenager, the turntable, you know, of this generation, and stereo manufacturers are having to respond to the need to let people, you know, play their music through their iPod. It's it's the signature technology of its era. It's how people listen to their music. And the other thing is, in the past, you know, like with CD players or with record turntables, no one company owned the format, owned the technology. And the odd thing here is that Apple has, you know, monopolized it. They've cornered the market for high-capacity digital music players. I think, if we were talking about previous technological revolutions, you would say that there were a lot of companies involved, and here Apple's managed to keep it to themselves so far.
In researching the book, how do you feel about that fact that we have a digital rights management discussion all the time about music that's distributed online? Apple has been both praised and criticized for theirs as opposed to some of the others out there. What's your feeling on that and where it's going to go, and is it a monopoly, or is it just something that every distributor of online music has to engage in?
Yeah, I think it's a reality of the business that Apple, I know, didn't want to put any DRM technology into the iPod or iTunes initially, and they were forced to do it by the labels as a condition for being able to sell music online. The labels wanted some kind of copy protection. And I think subsequently it was touted as pretty liberal. It allowed listeners to do a lot of things with the music. You could copy it to any number of iPods, you could burn it to CD, and you could share it across, you know, computers, five authorized computers on a local network. And so I haven't heard that many complaints from consumers about the DRM. I mean, people, activists, you know, digital rights activists make a lot of noise about it, but really I haven't heard a lot of complaints from consumers. I don't get this impression that it's restrictive, that people find it annoying to deal with. But the other important point about it is, of course, is that it's really a technology. It allows Apple to restrict music bought online through the iTunes Store to the iPod and vice versa. You know, only the iPod will play music bought at the iTunes Store. So it locks consumers into this loop where, and the more music that's bought through the iTunes Store, the more people are locked into Apple's format and locked into the iPod. And this is exactly what Microsoft did, or has been doing for, you know, decades, to tie people to its technology and to own the formats and to dominate, you know, whatever area it wants to get into. You own the format, and then you own the market, and people have to become compatible with you if they want to play in it. Apple's just doing, you know, playing the same old game that other technologies have been playing for years, and they seem to have got the jump on it. I mean, after this year's growth, I think Apple's, you know, I think AAC and Fair Play is the format that digital music is going to have to be in the future, simply because they have this gigantic install base of consumers who are locked into that format. They are going to be the Microsoft of the digital music era.
And isn't it interesting that you started out by saying that they really didn't want to put any DRM on the music? They were forced into it, and all of a sudden it has turned into a huge advantage.
Indeed it has, yeah. I think, you know, the iPod story is one of lucky accident. Really, you know, the Apple did a lot of things that I don't think they foresaw the consequences of. The white headphones is a good example. I mean, the white headphones were only white because the player was white. They wanted to keep it in, make the headphones the same color as the player. What it turned into was this great grassroots marketing technique that advertised a player that's hidden in someone's pocket or backpack, and then announced to the world, you know, that they have an iPod. And this sort of really, you know, did wonders in the, and Apple, you know, cleverly played it up in the advertising. They had silhouettes with white iPods, so they reinforced it. I mean, they clued in pretty quickly to its power and its utility. But, you know, it wasn't really designed as a marketing tool. They just recognized that it was could be used as one. So they definitely, you know, monopolized on the breaks they've been given. But I don't think they foresaw how big it was going to become. I mean, I know they didn't. I mean, there's no way. No one did. It was, you know, initially dismissed as a pricey toy, you know, obviously it's turned out to be something completely different and much more significant.
And another thing too, that it has changed so much, especially with the iTunes Music Store, is the ability to buy individual tracks, to spend the money on the music you really want, rather than having to buy a CD for one or two tracks that you'd like and then have the rest piggyback onto.
Right, exactly, you know, this is some of Apple and Steve Jobs' genius of giving, you know, people what they want. I think Apple, unlike most companies in technology or otherwise, think through the user experience, and they say, you know, what do people want? What do people want to do? And they tailor it to that. And here's a really good example. I mean, people, you know, want to buy tracks a la carte, and I think they learned this from Napster and Audio Galaxy and the other file-sharing applications. You know, tunes, songs were offered a la carte. And in fact, that's really what propelled the iPod. I mean, Apple didn't invent digital music. People had these huge collections of music on their computers, but they had no way to take them off of the computer without burning a big stack of CDs. You know, along comes a small hard drive. You stick it in a digital music player with a FireWire connection, and all of a sudden, you can take these gigantic collections with you, a whole lifetime's worth of music. And, you know, it changes everything, you know, from listening patterns to how you go about buying it.
Well, and all of a sudden the word playlist comes into the lexicon in a big way as a way to express yourself, not just to necessarily enjoy what you enjoy, but to share it and show the world what you enjoy.
Right, indeed, yeah. The playlist is the format for of choice, you know, for the digital music era. It's no longer the CD, it's no longer the LP, it's no longer the single. The playlist is king. The playlist is what defines, you know, the way that we listen to music in this digital age.
Leander, you said about the fact that the momentum just seems to keep building. We keep seeing new models of iPods come out, each cooler than the last. Now we have video on the iPod. We have the Nano that if the Shuffle could go anywhere, the Nano can go even more anywhere, if that's the right phrase. You know, what is next, and is there an end in sight at all, or is it just going to keep on going?
Well, earlier this year, I would have said the end was in sight. I was worried that Apple was going to get undercut by a cheaper player, and someone like Samsung or Creative was going to come out with a player that was just as good. But it looks as though there's no end in sight now. I mean, they have an iPod for every pocketbook. You know, they go from $89 or $90 to $500. And now with the video, it looks as though they may be able to leverage their clout in digital music into digital video. And presumably, it won't be just video for the iPod, it'll be video for the living room. You can easily see them with extending video sales through iTunes into a Mac Mini or an iMac in the living room, which they've already started to do with a remote control. And possibly, you know, in sometime in the future, you may be able to get movies, you know, all sorts of TV shows on demand, but also maybe movies that you could take either, you know, on your iPod, or you could watch it on a computer hooked to a TV in your living room. So, you know, I think Apple is poised to dominate digital entertainment the same way that Microsoft has dominated the PC revolution that put computers in people's workplaces. But they haven't been so successful in getting computers in people's homes, which Apple has. And I think, you know, this is the next big thing for computers is they're, you know, conduits for our entertainment now, for music and movies and games. And Apple is in a really good position to be the Microsoft of that era. And I think, you know, Steve Jobs has learned from his mistakes in the past, and I don't think that they're making the same mistakes this time around. They seem to be proceeding, effortlessly from one thing to another.
Leander, in the book you talk about the impact of the iPod on DJs. You talk about podcasting, obviously something near and dear to our hearts. You talk about some of the other cultural aspects of the iPod phenomena. iLearning, what is it, iPod jacking, which was one I was not familiar with, at least by name. Give the listeners a little idea of that, and maybe anything else that you're seeing evolve as new versions of the iPod and their capabilities come out.
Yeah, iPod jacking was something you saw in the early days of the iPod, when having a pair of white headphones signified that you belonged to some fairly exclusive club, and people were kind of curious about what they had on each other's players. And so if they met another iPod user in public on the bus or out in the park, you know, they would briefly swap headphone jacks to listen to what the other person was listening to. And it's a good way to sort of make an introduction to somebody that you might think is cute, or to maybe discover new music. But now that they're more common, you don't see it so much. I mean, not even that it was widespread in the first place, but much more common is like MP3J nights or iPod nights. You know, a lot of pubs and clubs have a night where they allow the patrons to bring their iPod in and play tunes off of it, you know, for the edification of the rest of the nightclub. Or they'll lay on a pair of iPods and let people spin off those. And that's, you know, spread to like hundreds, maybe thousands of venues around the world. I mean, almost all the major cities have regular iPod nights now.
So it has changed things top to bottom, and as you say, it really is just getting started, even though it looked like the wave might be cresting.
Yeah, I think, this next year is going to be really interesting. every 3 months they sell twice as many iPods as they sold, or almost as twice as many iPods as they sold the month before. And they're expected to sell 10 million this Christmas, which is, you know, quite an astounding number. John Rubinstein, Apple's head of the iPod division, predicted that Apple may eventually sell more iPods than Sony sold Walkmans. And Sony sold, I think, 320, 350 million Walkmans. And you know what effect the Walkman had on listening, on music. And so the iPod, you know, they think that it could be even bigger than the Walkman. And who knows, it may be.
It's really interesting to go to airports now. You expect to see the kids walking around with one version of the iPod or another. It's really unusual. Excuse me. It is no longer unusual, but it's still a little strange to see businessmen in suits and older businessmen, too, with the white earphones plugged in and listening to whatever they happen to be listening to.
Right, yeah. That's one of the odd things. It's cross-generational. You know, everyone's got one, from Vickers, preachers to young punks. It goes across all age gaps, and I guess that's because, you know, people of our age grew up in the 60s or the 50s even, and, you know, rock and roll has been part of youth culture for three generations now, so it's not quite as surprising as it was, you know, 20-30 years ago.
Is the music going to be the thing that continues to drive it, or do you think some of the original content creation, like podcasting and vodcasting and some of the initiatives to create learning resources for the iPods, you think that's going to help drive it farther, or is the music going to always be the key?
I think music will always be the key. I think people are in love with the music primarily. I think that's why people have such a deep connection with their iPod, because they're in love with the music that's on it. And they love what the iPod can do for that, how it serves it up. But I think, yeah, primarily it's the music. I think and that was a strange bit of genius too, you know, it's a lucky accident. People just love music, and you create a wonderful technology that can take, you know, a lifetime's worth of it with you, and you have a hit in your hands.
Leander, tell us the truth. How many iPods do you have, and what's your favorite?
I've got five, I think, and the Nano, because I just got it, and because it can do so many things. I like looking at the pictures of my kids on it, as well as listening to music. But I had a Mini for a long time. The Mini was my favorite because it was the right combination of small size but large capacity, and it was bulletproof. You know, I dropped it, kept it in my pocket. It was filthy, you know, and it always functioned. Very, very reliable.
Well, that's good. How about the video? Are you going to be picking one of those up soon?
No, my wife won't let me. And I don't know if it's that compelling. You know, I don't like Desperate Housewives, and I don't like Lost that much. And I don't really want to watch porn on it, which is the other thing that seems to be taking off. But it seems interesting. I mean, I don't have any use for it, really. I mean, I wanted it because Apple's technology, you know, makes you lustful. You really want these things. But I've learned from bitter experience that if I just hold off, if I can, you know, stay away from the Apple store, then, you know, then I won't, as long as I don't get one in my hands, then I wait a few weeks, and then I can sort of think about it more rationally. And with this, you know, I'm just never in a position to really watch it. You know, I'm in front of a computer screen all day, or I've got a TV at home. If I don't watch TV, I don't commute on the bus or the train or in the car for a long period of time. There's nowhere really where I would use it to watch video. But it's interesting to see, you know, what people are doing with it. And I think shortly, you know, people will do some really interesting stuff that may change my mind. I think there's going to be a lot of content created specifically for the iPod. And if, you know, like with a games console, you know, what sell the consoles are the killer games, really. People buy it to play a specific console to play a specific game. If some specific content comes along for the iPod, then that may be a good reason to go out and get it.
And that's another interesting thing, that the iPod has driven the content. Now we may be waiting to see the key content or the killer content come across and drive video for the iPod.
Right, yeah, and Apple is very clever to do that. You know, they haven't built it as a video iPod because there isn't a market, you know, there isn't a video to play on the iPod. They've offered it as an ancillary feature, you know, an extra, and hoping that people... Because they're such, you know, hoping that they'll sell 10 million this Christmas, which they will, and then early next year, people will say, "Wow, that's a big platform. There's a lot of people who've got these things. We should start making stuff for this." So, you know, they're doing it. It's textbook way to run a technology business. They're leveraging strength in one market into another, and they're doing it carefully and cleverly and step by step. It's going to be interesting next year to see what they come up with.
But they're also integrating with the media market. And I know you just finished saying that you're not a Desperate Housewives or Lost fan, but what did you think of their selection from a strategic standpoint of the first video offerings they decided to do? Was that the best thing they could have done?
You know, I haven't thought about this. And, I like to watch HBO. So... If they had a bunch of HBO series on it, I would have said, you know, I mean, personally, I would like to have seen that. But these are the top TV shows in America. I mean, they have gigantic audiences, right? 1 million a show, an episode. So, I mean, they've gone and got the top tier content. The funny thing is that no one predicted before. Everyone knew a video iPod was coming, but people thought it would be to watch, you know, your own home movies on or movie trailers. Or music videos. No one thought TV. I don't think I saw that in any report. No one thought that TV would be, you know, everyone talked about movies. You know, when are we going to see movies for the iPod? And that's why people were skeptical, because they didn't think the movie studios would offer their movies up for the iPod. And no one really looked at TV. And of course, you know, people watch a ton of TV, and there's a lot of interesting things going on in TV. It's the most creative format in the sort of popular arts at the moment. Look at things, you know, on the cable channels. There's so much good TV these days. I mean, TV in America is better than the movies. Movies are all about blockbusters. They're formulaic. They're franchise based. You know, they're just looking for hits. It's like some stars and big opening weekends. And it's dross. You know, it's rare to see a good movie. But look at TV. TV is amazing. There's some great TV, from The Sopranos to The Shield to Nip Tuck. You know, I mean, there's a whole bunch of really creative stuff going on in TV at the moment. And, you know, that's killer content for something like the iPod. Plus, another thing I just thought of is that it's aired. I mean, people are TiVoing it, but, you know, once it's aired, it's gone. And maybe they'll buy a whole series on DVD. It's a really good idea if you could serve this stuff online for a couple of dollars. I mean, I think people will eat it up.
It is almost an impulse buy.
Yeah, right, exactly, yeah. And you miss an episode, you know, I mean, people watch these things for a whole season. You miss an episode. I mean, I've gone to great lengths to try and get hold of episodes of shows that I've missed, you know, on BitTorrent and going to the video store. And if you have it online, I mean, you know, it's like you say, it's an impulse buy just to click that button and spend a couple of bucks.
Well, Leandro, I know you're busy. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. I want to make sure, though, that I give you a chance to tell the listeners where they can find more of your writings. Obviously, the Cult of Macintosh book and now the Cult of iPod book. Where else can they find you on a regular basis?
At the Cult of Mac blog, which is published in two places, cultofmac.com, and also at blog.wired.com/Mac, and the content is mirrored on the two sites.
Does that primarily focus on the concepts of Cult of Mac and Cult of iPod, or do you comment on just anything that comes down the pike?
Well, they're both. I'm an editor full time at Wired, so these are, you know, it's a part time endeavor, and most of it is iPod stuff these days. But, you know, I also try to post some Mac stuff, and I have some plans for the site, hoping to open it up to get more content on there. But it's about Mac and iPod culture. It's about what people are doing with it, the kind of things, the kind of change that it's making, hopefully. That's his focus.
Leandro, I hope you'll come back and talk to us as those two cultures continue to expand and diverge. We'd love to hear more about your thoughts on it, especially from a perspective that the unique perspective you have.
Oh, you're very kind. Thanks, Chuck.
We've been talking to Leandro Caney, the author, as we said, of the new Cult of iPod book from No Starch Press. Leandro, thanks again. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Chuck. Thanks for having me.
Your thoughts on this edition of Mac Voices or anything that has to do with the iPod or the Macintosh are welcome at chuck@macvoices.com or by phone to our talkback line at 206-350-1371. I would like to say thanks to all the listeners who have provided thoughts and commentary on the show. It helps keep Mac Voices on track to deliver the kind of information and guests that you want to hear. I especially want to thank Mark from Maryland for his validation of our more signal, less noise format. That's exactly what I hope to achieve with Mac Voices and as part of the panel of the other podcast I host, Mac Notables. You can learn more about both shows at their respective websites, macvoices.com and macnotables.com, or just do a search in the iTunes Music Store. They aren't hard to find. Finally, don't forget the time is growing short if you're planning to travel to San Francisco for Macworld Conference and Expo in January. There are still a few rooms left in the Mug Center's Macworld Hotel deal at the Renaissance Park 55 and supported by Circus Ponies, Mesa Dynamics, O'Reilly, Serene Saver, St. Clair Software, and Tropical Software. A link to the details is in our show notes, or just drop me an email and I'll get you signed up for the best mix of discounts and sponsor benefits available. And of course, we can also help you take 15% off the price of any and all conference packages by using the Mug Center's special discount code. Again, check the show notes for details. I'm Chuck Joyner, and I want to thank you again for joining us for the talk of the Macintosh community. I'll be back soon with another edition of Mac Voices.